change the world together. Welcome to the Snapcast, the podcast for all nonprofit professionals, bringing you interviews and amazing ideas for nonprofit leaders.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Nonprofit Snapcast. I'm your host, Mickey Desai. I am very happy today to be speaking with Brittany Wilson and Nia Wasink. Brittany and Nia are the co-hosts of the Nonprofit Reframe podcast. How are you guys today?
Hello. We're doing great.
Yeah.
Excited to be on here.
Yeah. Brittany, how long have you guys been in the business? How did you start your podcast? How did all that get rolling?
Yeah, that's a great question. Well, combined, Nia and I have over 30 years of experience in the sector, and we started noticing some of the same things happening over and over and over. Some of those things that you just can't believe that it's happening. And so Nia became my support person, my nonprofit work support person. And so I would call her after the end of a long day and regale my day and my stories, and she would do the same. And we started thinking that would make a great podcast episode. So that happened, what, for 2 years?
Probably about that.
That's very cool.
And then we got up to 54 topics, and we decided now is the time. So we have just finished our 61st episode.
Wow.
And so it's been a little over a year.
Very cool. Nia, what do you do in the business when you're not supporting Brittany?
Well, that does take a lot of my time.
That's a lot of her week.
But yeah, my day job, the one that actually pays me, is I'm a fundraising and board governance consultant, mostly here in Colorado and along the Rocky Mountain region.
Oh, okay. Very cool. Well, I'm glad we get to sit down and have this conversation. And there's a lot to talk about when it comes to funder power dynamics. But let me first ask, what does that mean to you guys when someone says funder power dynamics?
Well, I think it's that innate structure. So the way our sector is structured, you've got nonprofits doing amazing work and they need funding to do that. And so then you have these funders, foundations, grantors who have the capital that needs to be deployed in order for the nonprofits to do the good work. And sometimes those power dynamics get exploited negatively. You know, whether it's seemingly harmless things like grant reports that are massively cumbersome or even just the grant sizes not really matching what work needs to be done, all the way up to like the big high level where we're not seeing major progress on some of the social issues we would like our nonprofits to change. And yet our funders continue to get more money. Our donor advised funds certainly continue to have more money, and that's not actually being deployed to do the good work. And in a year with a pandemic and a summer of racial justice and a healthcare crisis, and now we've got natural disasters on top of that, this is the time that those funder dynamics need to be broken down so that those funds get out and can do the work that they need to be doing.
Brittany, why do you think that those dynamics exist? Is it just old school thinking that never went away, or is there a reason?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I think it's old school dynamics that have just been accepted over time. And, you know, Nia and I talk about this a lot on our podcast. You know, yes, we're highlighting kind of these inequities within the sector, particularly around power dynamics, but we're also looking at what we're doing within the nonprofits. So the nonprofits ourselves to really enable that, to keep that going. And so you have this dynamic that Nia was speaking to, where here we are as the nonprofit, we need the money. We tend to sit in a scarcity mindset of we don't have enough, we don't have enough, we don't have enough. So when somebody comes and says, well, here's an opportunity for $5,000, it's okay, how many cartwheels do you need us to do in order to get it? Because we just need $5,000. And so I do think that in order for us to break down these power dynamics, there has to be willingness on both sides. And that's willingness on the nonprofit side to also say, no, we're not going to do this for $500 or even $5,000. And until that happens, it's just going to stay the same.
Right. So I hate to ask you to name names, but can you provide some examples of how how it can go badly when it goes badly.
Everyone's like, silence.
I have to go take care of my children now. So.
Well, you know, I'll name the name that we talk about on the pod all the time. Yeah. Typically we don't, because we want, whether it's foundations, corporations, we want them to learn and grow, and calling out doesn't always work. But this one's big enough where no amount of calling out seems to be working. We're going to talk about Amazon.
Okay. And
let's just go right to the top.
Well, and this is a really interesting one because, you know, everybody talks about Amazon Smile. And if you're in the nonprofit Facebook groups or whatever, it's like, okay, how do I get my smile? How do I ensure that we're really, you know, getting the return on this?
Right.
The return is pennies. But yet a huge corporation like Amazon that does not get taxed at the same rate as other companies, that actually has some pretty significant human rights concerns against it, they are whitewashing their public image with these pennies of philanthropy. And so now they've got all these nonprofits out there saying, oh my gosh, we love Amazon. Look at the great work they're doing. And so they're really having nonprofits collude in creating this image of themselves that really isn't true. Because mind you, what they give is pennies against what their profit is.
So interesting that you frame it as a collusion. So these are people who have been scripted to say these things, or are they simply nonprofits who are grateful to get the pennies and that's the message that they're speaking with?
I think it's probably both. I mean, it goes to what Brittany was saying about that scarcity. Mm-hmm. We've been trained as nonprofits that any amount of money we get, we are so grateful for. We publicly say that we want to encourage that behavior, maybe not with the added layer of understanding of what saying that does about that collusion.
Yeah. And I think it's also perpetuated by people that don't really actually see the dollars. So, I mean, I can't tell you how many board members I've had that's like, I noticed that you all are not promoting Amazon Smile, and that's a missed opportunity. And I don't know why you're not doing that. But they don't realize, because they don't see that line item come in on the revenue side, that it's, you know, we have to think so strategically as fundraisers about our potential donors and supporters' attention bandwidth, right? And if you're pushing one thing, then that is taking up space that you could be pushing something else that is really more in line with your mission and could potentially be more profitable for the organization. And so I think it's getting into these ruts of, you know, everybody is always thinking about the same things, but they're not recognizing that the return on investment is not worth it.
Right. In our show notes, you originally said to me, when the dynamics are used for things that are not so good, that they can really harm the sector and the organizations that they're trying to support. Can you explain a little bit more about what that harm looks like?
So this is one, and I'm not going to name the funder. Mm-hmm. Feel free to check out grantadvisor.org if folks want to learn more about funders, though, because I maybe talked about it there. But this is a funder who is highly regarded in the community. And all people see is pretty large sums of money going out. You know, most of their grants are $25,000 to $100,000. On the back end, though, for the nonprofits, they end up with incredibly taxing grant applications, quarterly reports, quarterly training requirements, PR requirements for the funder, along with like approvals of usage of all of that. And so the burden on the nonprofit is pretty significant. So like, there's just that piece where we can't do as much good work because we're busy, you know, reporting to this funder about the good work we are supposed to be doing.
They've added a whole level of overhead that we didn't have a minute ago.
Right. Exactly. But then you also just have the funders who do that and exploit the power dynamic to where it actually harms staff. You know, I've seen funders who are just condescending, who treat their nonprofits poorly. And when we've got positions with high burnout and turnover, that actually hurts the entire sector when we have funders treating us that way.
Yeah.
There's no reason why nonprofit staff should be in tears after going to a grant review committee meeting. I mean, and I can't tell you how many times that has happened where...
Oh, I believe it.
Where they're just asking the most ridiculous questions or the most, they're putting you on the spot for some detail I mean, you have to do a 5-hour study session, you know, around all of your financials before you walk in, because God forbid they ask you that one question that you don't know, and then you're incompetent. Right. And your organization is incompetent, and so we're not going to give you funding.
And your ability to help change the world goes away.
Exactly.
Yeah. No, I get it. I'm sitting here laughing at it, but I'm realizing that it's not funny at all. It's, you know, I'm sort of laughing out of a defense mechanism as to how terrible the situation actually is. And to be fair, not all funders are like this, but for where it does happen, would you say that, I was about to ask you if it happens more often than it doesn't.
I think probably, but not always to the extent we're talking about. You know, sometimes it's just the funders who are going to require program specific funding. So they're going to restrict the dollars. The dollars are going to be really small, and the application or interview process is onerous. That's kind of the traditional grant structure that we've seen that Brittany was talking about. So yeah, that could be changed, and good could come of those changes. The kind of extreme where it is like outright exploited, that power dynamic, I think that is less frequent. And I think we've seen real shifts in philanthropy in the last year where that behavior is being called out, or the funder who directs 99% of their funding to white-led organizations. That kind of behavior is really being called out. Right. And so funders are having to adjust pretty significantly. My guess is by the end of 2021, our philanthropy landscape on the foundation side is going to look so different than it did even 2 years ago.
Right. So I've asked you to, you know, sort of call out what happens, or you know, call out a circumstance, what happens, what the bad part looks like. Can we highlight what it looks like when it works well, when the dynamic is shifted in the right way instead of the wrong way?
I mean, I can just say from experience, the funders that I have a lot of respect for are ones that we actually have a relationship with. So they take the time to have conversations with us before the grant is due. They're open to hearing our ideas around where we think the funding would be best served and best used. And, you know, they might still make a recommendation of like, well, you know, this is our funding focus, and, you know, it might be better if you use this slant to your, or highlight this part of your programming. But it really is a conversation, and the grant application itself is not onerous. It's pretty basic, and it's not asking for the same information over and over and over again.
Right.
And the reporting requirements are doable. I think, not again to go back to what it shouldn't be, but I was thinking as you were talking, when it can be harmful to an organization. I mean, I was part of an organization many years ago that got federal funding, and that's a whole different beast, right? Yeah. Federal funding. I just, like, we could do a whole episode just on that. But their reporting, what they wanted from us, actually affected our service delivery in a way that was not in line with our values as an organization. So, you know, we were working with a vulnerable population, and they wanted us to get information from them at a time that was inappropriate, you know, before we'd established a trusting relationship. And so that's where it gets really scary around, you're just adding this to your grant form, and you're not realizing the impacts that it's even having on how we serve our clients.
You know, and I would take what you said there, Brittany, a step further in terms of funders actually being able to do good. You know, we've seen, I think especially a lot of our local funders who have tried to implement questions in their applications that are really around some of the best practices we know nonprofits should be enacting. And so then those organizations and those executives can go to their board and say, yeah, okay, so our board actually does have to work on diversity because our funders are now requiring it. Or we do need term limits.
Right.
Those of you who have been on the board for 20 years, I'm so sorry. Our funders say we need term limits. So like, there are some of those pieces where I think that funders have been able to use their positions of power to shift some things, and right, to ensure that organizations really are structured in ways that promote that the community needs more deeply even.
Sure. Well, that was going to be my next question. You know, if this, given that it's a two-party transaction, right? The funders can do things to make things better. The nonprofits can do things to make things better. We've talked about how funders can themselves can just be more progressive and drive certain kinds of change. What other things can funders do to make things easier for the world to be a better place?
Well, I'm thinking about, to Nia's point, this last year really has opened up a lot of these dynamics. And we saw right after quarantine hit, a lot of funders come back and unrestrict their funding that they had already given. Okay. So that's a huge one. I mean, if you listen to our podcast, that is what we say over and over and over again is not restricting gifts, which I guess kind of flies in the face of most funding funders because they have funding focuses.
Right.
But even then, there was a funder who that I was a part of who wanted to tell everybody that they were going to unrestrict their funding. But in order to do that, we were all required to come to a meeting. And then they gave 20 minutes at the beginning of it for everybody to go around and say who they are, which really turned into a 20-minute love fest of the funder, right? Like, I'm so-and-so from X organization, and thank you so much, wife, you know, foundation for having us here today. And it was ridiculous. And so it was supposed to be under this guise that they were doing us a favor and look at us, we're being so progressive and yada, yada. But even just delivering that information, they missed the mark on, you know, this is now added work for us.
Yeah. Okay. So what can a nonprofit do then as their part in this dynamic? How can a nonprofit also make things a little more progressive in this way?
I think one of the key things is actually to have leadership at the top that understands that you don't need every grant. You don't need to be in relationship with every funder. It's going to help protect your staff to say no to some of those and protect your time. Actually, I think turning down funds is one of the most powerful things that a nonprofit can do. And sometimes you can do that from a really values related space. You know, this funder does things like poor hiring practices, Amazon, that go against what we do as an organization. And so therefore we don't want their money.
Right.
Like, how great for an organization to come out and say, we are standing in this position of strength and not scarcity, and we don't need your money.
But the words that you just said scare the hell out of me, and I'm not even on board at the moment. You know, it's like turn down funding. How can I turn down funding when I'm counting on that money to be able to pay my staff and, you know, save the environment or whatever?
Yeah, and I think that's a very real concern. And organizations that are having these kind of conversations are grappling with exactly that. What I've seen, especially in the last year, as I've been working with clients to have some of these conversations, especially those values ones, is that when they do that, other funding comes. And especially if they are able to do it in a public way, other funding comes. And so I had one client who said, this funder actually has made decisions that go against the LGBTQ community. And that's a key demographic we serve. We are not going to accept their funding. And their local LGBTQ community stepped up in huge waves of funds and gave them more than they ever would have gotten from this funder.
Wow. Okay.
So standing in your values, standing in your principles, I actually think is a pretty key fundraising strategy.
Okay.
Yeah. One of the other things that we saw after quarantine last year, which I thought was great, is organizations who publicly said, you know what, we're okay for right now. We've been able to pivot our programming as such that it's not costing us an arm and a leg in order to do it. But we know that there's these frontline organizations that really need your help right now. So please support our sister or brother organization in that way. Getting out of this mindset, I don't know any other way to describe it except for how Voulez does of the nonprofit Hunger Games. And not being just, you know, all for yourself, but really supporting each other as a network of organizations that are lifting up entire communities, I think can be really helpful. The other thing that I want to add, because this is my pet peeve, is to be solid in your own evaluation practices within your organization and not to bend your metrics or what you're trying to do through your program just to appease a funder. And that happens so often where it's like, well, what do they want to hear and what do they want to see? But is that really what we're truly trying to accomplish here? So taking the funders out of it and first looking at your programming and coming up with what metrics are you going to use to, how are you defining success within your own programs? And then providing those to funders rather than you know, trying to adapt to their definition of success.
Right, right. So you're saying also that there's some room to be selective about who we actually apply to.
Well, absolutely.
Yeah, that's certainly a mindset that I have to change, right? It's like in my mind, I don't know that the funding market is really that diverse. It's, but apparently it is, and I'm just not aware of it.
Yeah. And I mean, it goes back to what you were saying. That's really scary. So, I mean, but we get in trouble with that all the time as nonprofits with mission drift, right? Yeah. I mean, with, oh gosh, you know, here we do X program, but they're giving money for Z program over here. Can't we just, you know, adapt it a little bit? And so, I think it's good practice for us, yep, you know, within the sector, just to stay in our lane and then be a little bit more pragmatic about who we're choosing to ask for funding from.
I want to ask you both for your individual words of advice, just parting words of advice for nonprofits out there. Brittany, what would you say if there's one piece of knowledge you wanted to leave with a nonprofit or a funder, what would that be?
Oh, wow. Well, I think that this, all of what we're talking about right now is not going to happen overnight. And so it's just taking it a step at a time and reviewing your practices one practice at a time. I mean, we're talking about funder dynamics right now, but the same thing can be had for whether or not you choose to have a gala fundraiser and whether that's in line with the values of the organization. And again, these are all really scary things to think about. But if you start having the conversation now and do it little bit by little bit, then over time, maybe we can start, you know, changing the course of the boat, so to speak. And as a sector, we can all start moving in that same direction.
Nia, what would you say? What would you leave a nonprofit with?
Well, I would take what Brittany said and turn it back to funders. So my guess is most funders don't realize how harmful some of their practices are or how out of alignment it is with their values. So if you are a funder out there, whether it is a tiny little family foundation, up to community foundation, up to corporate CSR program, take a minute and review your practices, your policies, and your giving through your values. Because if you do that, my guess is you're going to find some ways that you can improve and create better relationships with your nonprofit partners and the community as a whole.
Excellent. Nia, Brittany, thank you. If a listener wanted to be in touch with you, how would you suggest they go about doing that?
They can email us, nonprofitreframe@gmail.com. They can also follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Nonprofit Reframe.
Nonprofit Reframe. And to my listeners, if you haven't checked out the podcast, I highly recommend it. You won't regret it. Please check out the Nonprofit Reframe podcast. Brittany, Nia, thank you for making the time to do this episode with me today. I've thoroughly enjoyed this conversation.
Thank you, Mickey.
Thanks for listening to the Nonprofit Snapcast. I value your feedback via the Nonprofit Snapcast website. That's nonprofitsnapcast.org. I would welcome the opportunity to tell you more about my consulting services. Visit nonprofitsnapshot.org and click on the consulting tab to learn more about the work that I do with nonprofits across the country.
This has been the Snapcast. Thank you for joining us.